All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Tuesday, January 14th of 2025. And looking ahead today, we have a big 13-game NHL main slate tonight. And then we also have a 7-game NBA main slate. So it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at Saber Sim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions. Get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and wanting to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So tune in any one of those days, get your questions answered. Apologies if the show is a little bit dark today. Decided to use no lighting here just because the lights in my face give me a pretty big headache right now at the moment. So still getting better each and every day. So hoping to be over this flu very, very soon here. But appreciate you guys tuning in and bearing with me. Let's get SaberSim up, and we will start to answer questions that came in the Discord first, and then we will jump over to any questions rolling in live in the YouTube chat. So, first question up here, when it comes to player ownership projections, if a player at lock shows 10%, but when you enter the contest he is at 30%, does the projection go back and look at why that player's ownership went up so much? This is a little bit more of like a back testing kind of scenario, right? If the team were so first off, you know, we have our different buckets of ownership, right? All of these have different inputs, different things that go into them that affect the ownership projections, right? So like, for instance, I'm looking at flagship MME. Jokic is about 23% owned. Then what if I go look at high stakes single entry? Okay, well, he goes up to 41%, right? So there's a big fluctuation between the different contest types here. So that could be like one part of it, right? Is like, hey, we're backtesting. Are we seeing these players like increase at these different rates and things like that? Another one could be like a little bit more of what you're talking about, like, hey, we were just off on ownership. Why was that? Sometimes that just comes down to how we're projecting players versus other places in the industry, right? So if we have Jokic at a 5.3 value, like right now, but maybe, you know, another well-known name in the space has him at like a 5.1 value, right? That could have a big impact on the ownership projections, because typically your ownership projections come from your fantasy point projections. Those have a big input into that. And if, you know, somebody is projecting him lower, well, then that player's ownership is probably going to be lower across the board. And then similarly, right, when, you know, we have some high value player like Clint Capella, for instance, right now, and when we are over projected against somebody else's projections, then we're going to assume that this player's ownership is higher and maybe they end up coming in a little bit lower, right? So ownership projections are basically always have some type of correlation to the projections that are being used. It's not like we're not using like an industry aggregate or anything like that when it comes to our ownership projections. All right. Next question. Is it right that FanDuel doesn't draw the live ownership? Is there a way to update the ownership manually for late swap? Okay. So two things on this. So number one, it is right that FanDuel doesn't have the actual contest ownership. And the reason for that is that FanDuel does not allow anybody for that matter to download their contest data. Okay. So like the same way we're able to do flashback for DraftKings, we can't do it for FanDuel. The same way when a slate starts, we are able to pull in the actual ownership for the games that have locked. FanDuel does not allow for that. So that's why there's no actual ownership. there is live updating ownership. I think one thing that people sometimes miss here in the app is that you do have to change it manually to see it. So let's say that, you know, lock comes, lock goes, you know, we're now post lock, right? Your ownership source, the my own column, whatever you're viewing. So, you know, let's go back to flagship MME. This doesn't update or it doesn't change the view automatically. So when the slate locks and then, you know, on FanDuel, you have to wait for additional sims to run. So let's say like slate locks and then a new sim runs 10 minutes after. Okay, well, after that new sim runs, then you're going to see a new ownership source in this gear icon. And it's going to say Saber Sim Ownership. And then there's going to be a second one. It's going to say Saber Sim Ownership Live. You have to come in here and then go and switch to the corresponding live option. So it'd be like flagship MME. And then under the live section, it would say flagship MME live. So you have to go and switch to that. And then you'll see any updates to ownership. So I think that's something that can happen there is like, hey, you know, I'm not seeing these players move. Just go in and switch it. The other thing, right, is that you'll also see the timestamp is related to the source that you're viewing. So this flagship MME, basically the timestamp will never update after lock for flagship MME because it becomes flagship MME live. So I've seen scenarios where you know, users are asking like, hey, you know, ownership hasn't updated. It's because they're looking at the pre-slate and this will basically never update after, you know, 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time here. So that's another thing to consider, but go into the my own, switch it, and then you can see those updates. All right. And then second part of the question, you know, is there a way to update ownership manually for lead swap? So as long as there is a live column, and then as long as you go to the contest tab, you go to this gear icon in field lineups and this use live fields toggle is on, it will use the SaberSim live ownership field in your contest sim automatically. So even if you're not switching it manually in the my own, it is still using those live options for your field lineups for your live contest sims. So that part does get taken care of automatically, even if the view doesn't change automatically. Question reads, why is ownership important and what does it mean? Is it like how many people in the field has for ownership? Okay, so ownership is describing how many lineups in your contest roster a certain player. So for instance, right, with this 26% ownership for Pascal Siakam, this is saying, hey, we expect 26% of the lineups in this contest to have this player on their team. So if this was a 1,000-person contest, we would expect about 260 people or 260 lineups, rather, to have Pascal Siakam. So that's what ownership means. Now, why ownership is important, it comes down to, you know, if a player is 100% owned, well, when they do good, well, guess what? It's helping everybody in the contest. It's not helping you separate yourself from the pack in any way, shape, or form. So the big thing, right, with ownership is like when you can find players who have a lower ownership that do well, well, guess what? Your lineups with that player are increasing in fantasy points while everyone else is staying stagnant, right? So, you know, when you roster the 2% owned Davis Allen in the Vikings-Rams showdown yesterday, guess what? You know, there's 98% of lineups that don't get that touchdown, but your lineups do, right? That's a huge boost to your lineups. So ownership is important because it gives you a sense of, hey, you know, how many lineups in this contest have this player? typically, you know, in like showdown type formats, going back to the football example, the more ownership, the more likely a lineup is to be duplicated because more lineups have those, that player, those players, et cetera. And then the lower the ownership, less lineups have that player. So then that means there's more available combinations of lineups without that player, right? So you can get to more unique lineups when you're using these players that are lower owned, or sometimes you find good players with low ownership in classic slates, and those players, you know, help you get to the top of the standings, right? I mean, ultimately, you know, we're trying to get in first place, second place, you know, third place, these very high standings in these contests have thousands of entries, right? So we're trying to find outcomes that are in the top 0.1%, 0.01% of a contest. And, you know, you don't get that by rostering, you know, eight different 50% owned players, right? So that's what ownership is. That's why it's important. Happy to answer any more questions around it if any more questions come up. All right. Next question. Sorry if this has been asked recently, but how do you recommend filtering out lineups for NFL showdown after going through your normal process, setting salary restrictions, mini uniques, boosting and docking players, etc.? I'm happy with my process for main slates, but I've been getting wrecked in showdown all season. Yeah, good question. So as far as, you know, showdown versus classic, you know, I really treat them differently. I think that showdown is just a totally different beast as far as the way that you should approach it, right? And the big thing is that in showdowns, you're typically hunting for, you know, the best lineup possible. We call it the optimal lineup, right? And you're not always going to need the optimal to win. I don't know if you needed the optimal to win last night. You know, it was a Rams D captain slate, and you can always get a little bit different with those. And then like the whole Tyler Higbee, you know, coming out of the gate crushing and then getting hurt scenario. Usually when weird things like that happen, it leads to more unique lineups or potentially not needing the absolute highest possible scoring lineup. So, but you usually need something close to that, right? So in classic slates, you don't. So, you know, in classic slates, I'm much more likely to diversify, to try and get more spread out, to worry about, not worry about needing the highest scoring lineup possible. But in showdown, you got to think a little bit differently, right? So in showdown, you know, I'm okay going from a pool of, you know, 5,000 lineups down to a pool of 500 lineups and then taking my final lineups from there. I would basically never do that on a classic slate because I want to get more diverse. I want to, you know, spread out, and I need more lineups to do that. I would approach it differently. So as far as like showdown, still sorting lineups by ROI, still filtering out lineups that are lower than 0% ROI. You know, I still want to play positive lineups. People will say like, hey, you know, that can lead to filtering out a lot of lineups in your pool. I understand that. And frankly, I'm okay with it. You know, that's kind of what I was talking about right now. As far as other things you could do, right? It's always going to depend on how your lineups are grading out in flashback. So it's a little bit hard to give like prescriptive advice, but I would, you know, go into flashback and study your lineups and see like where you're off, right? With showdown, there's always a balance between duplication, sim average score, uniqueness, and trying to figure out where you want to be like on that spectrum. You know, some people play a lot higher duped lineups, but with, you know, really high sim average scores. And that's more of like a approach of like, hey, I'm going to try to win more often, even if I'm duplicated. And, you know, you don't win as much of the first place prize when you win, but what you do is you end up, you end up, you know, maybe winning more often, right? You might need to win more times in a season to be profitable, but that's one approach, right? Or you can go with like the super unique approach where, you know, you're trying to get one win in the season, and, you know, that win will basically pay for all your entry fees and more. That's another approach, right? Or you find something in between where, you know, you're trying to play lower duped lineups, like, you know, single digit duplication, and you're trying to strike a balance between duplication and same average score, and rather than being on like one side or the other. So those are like the three kind of ways that I see people approach showdown most often. And you see top pros, you know, have differing styles. It's not like, oh, all the pros are doing one thing, or all the pros are doing the other thing. There's always a mix, right? You see big names going at it one way, you see big names going at it another way. And it just shows you that there's, you know, more than one path to victory, especially for showdowns. So as far as like showdowns, things that I'm mostly thinking about, you know, like you said, like the salary restrictions, geometric mean filters, geometric mean rules, some ownership filters, some ownership rules, projection filtering to balance out some of the ownership adjustments. And then obviously the ROI sorting, right? So that's really what it comes down to, you know. But if you say you've been struggling with showdowns, probably one of the best things to do would be to sign up for a build review show. You know, that way I could just see exactly what you're doing and then give you personalized feedback and advice. So I'm speaking a little bit more in generalities as far as like what I think a good showdown process looks like, but I'd be happy to add you to the list for the next build review show. We could dive into your specific lineups a little bit further and then give you some, a little bit more of a roadmap as to things to try out here for, you know, the next 3 to 4 weeks of NFL that we have left this season. All right, question from Sam. When I'm trying to prepare for late news swaps, what is a good rule of thumb if I want to boost key players in a late game, 5%, 10%, or is there a more direct way to affect that player's ROI? Good question. Well, it's a little bit hard to say, right? Because, you know, a 10% boost to like somebody like 20% with 20-point projection, like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm going to boost, you know, Caleb Martin from 21.1 to, you know, 23. That's probably fine, right? But, I mean, if I'm going to boost, you know, Nikola Jokic 10%, right? I mean, look, he's going to go up by 6+ points here. That's actually like really, really aggressive. So if I had to make a recommendation, I would say projection boosts, giving people projection boosts anywhere from like 1 to 3 points, depending on their baseline, is like probably fine. You could do a couple different things here, right? If you're trying to guarantee exposure to players in late games, you could, one, adjust their projection like you're talking about. I would say anywhere from like 1 to 3 points. You could set minimum exposures to the players, or you could use rules, right? Maybe I want to use 3 players from the last game of the night because there's a couple questionable players there, right? So I could just go to rules, go to add new rule, go to group manual, and I would say use at least 3. I would click edit players. And then I would just filter for these 2 teams in question. And then I would just go and I would select them all, right? And then, you know, I select as many players as I see fit. And once I'm done, I click save. And then it's going to use at least 3 of these, in this case, 7 players that I selected once I click save. So there's a couple different ways to do that. But I think one of those 3 options, projection, adjustment, exposure, or a rule, are the best. The rules, the most restrictive / most guaranteed to give you exactly what you're looking for as a whole, right? Exposure only works on like 1 player at a time, but if you do multiple, it could work. And then the projection adjustments could get you more exposure, probably will, but it's not guaranteed to do so. All right. Good stuff so far. Gonna take a peek back in the office hours channel, And it looks like we are all caught up there as well. So appreciate the questions. Sorry to still, you know, be going a little bit slow here. I know I'm definitely probably more like monotone than ever before. And, you know, just chugging along here, trying to get better. So appreciate you guys still tuning in, still asking questions. I'll be back tomorrow for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.